such joy to be with you and to look out here at those assembled today to worship God in spirit and in truth. What a wonderful song service. Tell you, there's a blessing in sitting up front, you know. For those of you in the back that think the songs were just kind of, you need to sit up here. You can hear a whole lot better, and just sounded great. So thank you for singing with your heart and your soul today. Today we want to take a look at, as you see in your family talk there, Sunday talk on page 3, a sermon entitled The Never-Ending Story. I'll be honest, I preached this lesson several years ago down at the Lakeland Church in Mattoon, and one brother saw that title and said, well, that sounds like every sermon you preach, The Never-Ending Story. My rejoinder to that was, well, if you'd pay attention, you'd go a lot faster. So nevertheless, we want to take a look at a concept today, and it's going to take me a while to develop it, all right? It won't be the never-ending story in the sense of the developing of the point, but you're going to have to hang in there with me a little bit out of Nehemiah, and then when I get down to the point, I'll make it and you'll get it, all right? So let's take a look back in history a little bit of the days of Nehemiah and what was going on. We pick up the story a little bit before what Gary read for us out of Nehemiah chapter 12, and that is Nehemiah is serving the king of Persia. And Nehemiah understands that the wall around Jerusalem in his hometown Jerusalem is broken down and shattered remains. And this greatly disturbs Nehemiah, so he goes to the king and he says, I want permission to leave the service here and go back to Jerusalem, go back to my hometown, if you will, and rebuild that wall. And the king says, fine, I'll let you go. Fact is, if we'd take time and look back in Nehemiah, the king gives him supplies and building materials and all to help him in going out and rebuilding the wall around Jerusalem. And so sure enough, Nehemiah goes back, and he doesn't just rebuild the wall. That he accomplishes about through the first four chapters of Nehemiah. But he also and does a lot of various things. And Nehemiah was a worker, and he energized people, and he got them going and got them moving. And what a tremendous leader he was. And so sure enough, as we pick it up here in chapter 12, as to what Gary read for us just a few moments ago, it's a time in Jerusalem for great rejoicing because the city is basically rebuilt, the temple has been rebuilt, and now the wall has been rebuilt. And so Nehemiah calls all the people together and says, rejoice, this is great. After all of these years in captivity, after watching people plunder the city, we have rebuilt the town, we've rebuilt the wall, and it's time to rejoice. And as the text says, people from afar off could hear the wonderful spirit, the spirit of happiness, the spirit of joy that was being felt in the city because of things being built. So Nehemiah comes back to the king. And he says, King, it's wonderful, it's great. We have rebuilt the wall. Thank you for the blessing of allowing me out of my job here, serving you to be able to do that. And so some time passes, and I don't exactly remember how much time, but some time passes, and word comes to Nehemiah that things just aren't as rosy as he left them. Fact is, there's some trouble at hand, and so Nehemiah is granted a leave again from the king to go back into the city, and we kindly pick up the story here then in chapter 13 of Nehemiah of some problems that happened. And so let's look now at Nehemiah chapter 13 and verse 1, if you are there within your Old Testament. I want to read some to you here again. I've got to take a moment to develop my concept, my idea, and then when we get to the end, it'll have some punch to it, all right? Nehemiah 13, verse 1. On that day they read aloud from the book of Moses in the hearing of the people, and there was found written in it that no Ammonite nor no Moabite should ever enter into the assembly of God, because they did not meet the sons of Israel with bread and water, but hired Balaam against them to curse them. However, our God turned the curse into a blessing. So it came about when they had heard the law, they excluded all foreigners from Israel. Now prior to this, Eliashib, the priest, who was appointed over the chambers of the house of our God, being related to Tobiah, had prepared a large room for him. where they formerly had put the grain offerings and the frankincense and the utensils and the tithes of grain, wine, and oil prescribed for the Levites, the singers and the gatekeepers, and the contributions for the priests. What's going on here is the fact that in the temple there were various rooms. And one of the rooms that should have been used for the storing of grain, for the storing of the wine, for everything that the priests would have needed to offer their sacrifices, those materials would be put in this particular room of the temple, and then as the Levites needed them to make their offering, they would be accessible. But what had happened was that the fellow who was to oversee that, the one priest that was in charge of the temple grounds and all of the rooms, he had set aside this particular room that was to house all of the offerings for a guy by the name of Tobiah, and he could kind of store his stuff there, you know? It's like he couldn't buy a storage garage like the rest of us, you know? He says, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll give you a room in the temple, and you can put your stuff in there. That wasn't right. Tobiah had no business, one, being in the temple to begin with, and two, if we take time to go back and look at the first several chapters of the book of Nehemiah, he opposed Nehemiah bitterly. If you go back over there to Nehemiah chapter 4 and verse 3, this Tobiah is watching Nehemiah build the wall, all right, and he's just ridiculing him. He's just is leveling all kinds of criticism and sarcasm at him, and he says, you know what, O Nehemiah, this is no good. Even if a fox were to run on this wall, that wall would crumble. Now, a fox is not the heaviest animal. It's not the biggest animal by any means. And to say that all it would do would be to take the weight of a fox to bring the wall down was quite a criticism. He says, I'm building a better wall than that. But that was Tobiah. He was very discouraging. He did not want Nehemiah to do what he was doing. He was an enemy of the work of God. He was an enemy of the work of Nehemiah. And sure enough, now Nehemiah comes back, and this very enemy, this one who's very critical of what's going on, has got a room for his stuff in the temple. Wow. You know, Nehemiah did the work, but now the work is being undone. And isn't that the way it is sometimes in life, that we work hard, we set things up, we put things in motion, and lo and behold, it doesn't seem to take very long till the things that we've done begin to unravel. And the things that we've done that we thought were so solid and so much in place are all of a sudden out of place. And that's what Nehemiah is finding, that all of this restoration and all of this joy that he found in rebuilding the wall and setting up the worship and all that is starting to unravel. Here, Tobiah, a known enemy of God, one who should not be in the temple in the first place, is not only in there, he's got a storage room. Well, the text says that Nehemiah threw all of Tobiah's things out of the temple. And I mean, you know, let your imagination work here just for a little bit. I think he literally did that. I mean, if you can see stuff flying out the windows and flying out the front door of the temple, I have a feeling that's what it is, because the text says that Nehemiah did it in anger. That is, Nehemiah is upset. This should never have been done. He should never have had a room in there. He should never be in there in the first place. And he's even storing his stuff where the Levites ought to have their grain offerings and all their other things and their utensils and all of that so that they can offer. And Nehemiah is physically throwing all of that out. Truly today, we may find things going on in the church that need to be thrown out, right? Truly, sometimes we get involved in stuff we don't need to be involved in. And truly, that's where God has appointed elders and deacons to help keep things running smoothly and truly to make sure that they're doing what they ought to be doing. That's not my necessary point, but that's a side point. I threw that one in for free, okay? All right. So Nehemiah comes back, and the rejoicing is over. He sees Tobiah, and he throws Tobiah out, all right? Now go down to chapter 13, verse 10. Problem number two. The priests were working in the fields rather than in the temple. You see, a priest's place was in and around the temple. They were to be teaching the law. They were to be offering sacrifice. They were to be taking care of the temple grounds, all right? But when Nehemiah came back, he didn't find the priests doing that. He found them outside in the fields being farmers. Here, verse 10. I also discovered that the portions of the Levites had not been given them. So the Levites and the singers who performed their service had gone away, each to his own field. So I reprimanded the officials and said, "Why is the house of God forsaken?" Then I gathered them together and restored them to their posts. All Judah then brought the tithe of the grain, the wine, and the oil into the storehouses. He discovered that truly they weren't doing the job they were supposed to be doing. They were doing other things they were supposed to be doing. And isn't that true sometimes with our lives? You know, we get so busy and so many things that we really don't do what we're supposed to be doing. Nehemiah says, "You priests, get out of the field. That's for other people to do. You're supposed to be in here in the temple serving there." And then he told the people, he says, "You know why they're out in the fields? Is because you're not bringing in the tithe." He says, "I want you folks to start bringing in the tithe." Because you see, that's what the priests were to live off of. They would offer the sacrifice, give the fat of the animal offerings unto God, and then they could keep the meat. Truly, they would offer the grain offering unto God, and what wasn't unto God, they could keep, and they would live off of that. That's why Paul would later argue over there in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 that preachers who preach the gospel could derive their living from the gospel, because that's exactly how the Old Testament priest did. He wasn't supposed to be out there in the field having a, we might call a secular job. He was a priest of God. He's supposed to be working in a temple. And the people, by their giving of their tithes and their offerings and their sacrifices, the priest then could do their job in giving what was God's, and then they could keep what was left over for themselves. That wasn't happening. Truly, we're busy people. I'm probably just as busy as anybody, but I've got to remember, as you've got to remember, the important things need to be done first. And so now Nehemiah is having to go back and clean out the temple, and then he's got to get the priests busy working in the temple again, because they were not doing that. The work was coming undone. Well, now we go down to verse 15, and we got problem number three. Problem number three, Nehemiah 13:15. "In those days I saw in Judah some who were treading the wine presses on the Sabbath, and bringing in sacks of grain and loading them on donkeys, as well as wine and grapes and figs and all kinds of loads, and they brought them into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. So I admonished them on the day they sold food. Also men of Tyre were living there who imported fish and all kinds of merchandise and sold them to the sons of Judah on the Sabbath, even in Jerusalem. Then I reprimanded the nobles of Judah and said to them, 'What is this evil thing that you're doing by profaning the Sabbath day? Did not your fathers do the same, so that our God brought on us and on this city all this trouble? Yet you are adding to the wrath on Israel by profaning the Sabbath.'" Problem number three in Israel and watching Nehemiah's work come undone is they were no longer keeping the Sabbath. They were working on the Sabbath. They were out there toting loads. They were buying and selling. They were just treating the Sabbath as any other day. So, okay, today's the Sabbath. Guess we'll set up shop and go to work. No, you shouldn't be doing that. Fact is, the Gentile folks, it says there were some guys from Tyre, they were just outside the city, and they had set up camp and said, "Well, if this is Sabbath, they'll come out like they do every other day, and they'll trade, and they'll do business with us." And Nehemiah says, "No, you Gentiles, just go away. This is the Sabbath." And he says, he went then to the leaders of Judah, and he says, "Why are you going right back down the same road that got us in this trouble in the first place?" You see, now Nehemiah is appealing all the way back before they went to Babylonian captivity, and he says, "One of the reasons we went into captivity was our idolatry, and we would not keep the Sabbath." One of the things you'll read back in Chronicles and all, and some in Ezra, was that God says, "I will get my Sabbaths." And sure enough, while the Jews wouldn't honor him by keeping the Sabbath before captivity, God got his Sabbath in captivity, just like he said he would. Well, here they are coming out of captivity, and they're profaning the Sabbath all over again. He says, "You guys got a short memory." Let's not do that in our life and have a short memory. And forget the lessons of the scriptures and the lessons that need to be learned so we don't repeat them all over again. truly, let's make sure that we keep things that are holy, holy, and that we make sure we make that separation that what we give to God is God's, and that we treat everything else the way we're supposed to. That wasn't happening here, and Nehemiah is upset about it. He says, you folks aren't keeping the Sabbath, and this is one of the very problems that got us in trouble in the first place. Wow. Nehemiah's got to be upset. He's worked hard beforehand to try to set things right with the temple, with the priests, and with the Sabbath, and he's watching what he did all come undone. One more problem, and then the lesson will be yours. Look down now in verse 23, problem number 4. The Jews were intermarrying with Gentiles. Verse 23. In those days I also saw that the Jews married women from Ashdod, Ammon, and Moab. As for their children, half spoke the language of Ashdod, and none of them was able to speak the language of Judah, but the language of his own people. So I contended with them and cursed them and struck some of them and pulled out their hair. That gotta hurt. And made them swear by God, you shall not give your daughters to their sons, nor take their daughters for your sons for yourselves. Did not Solomon, the king of Israel, sin regarding these things? Yeah, that's a rhetorical question. The answer is yes. He says, you guys didn't learn a thing from Solomon. That the whole reason that the kingdom split into Israel in the north and Judah in the south, the whole reason that God allowed the Assyrians to take the Judeans away and for the Babylonians to take away those that are in Judah was because you were intermarrying, because you were following idolatry, because you had brought in these strange Gentile peoples. The law of Moses strictly forbid Israelites to marry non-Israelites. That was plain in the law. That was obvious in the law, and yet that's exactly what they were doing. And look who's really getting hurt here. The children. The children are paying an awful price as well because of this forbidden intermarriages. They're not growing up learning Aramaic. They're not growing up learning Hebrew. They're speaking the language of Ashdod. They're speaking the language of their Gentile spouse, or their Gentile parents, excuse me. They're going to forget the things of the law. They're going to forget God. They're going to go after pagan idolatry. I mean, the path is set up. That's where they're headed, all right? What a sad thing it is. And so again, Nehemiah is upset with all of this. He doesn't like what he sees at all. He says, this is going to be the ruination of us all over again. Can't do it. All right. Verse 27. Do we then hear about you that you've committed all of this great evil by acting unfaithfully against our God and marrying foreign women? Even one of the sons of Jodiah, the son of Eliashib, the priest, was a son-in-law of Sanballat, the Horonite, so I drove him away from me. Sanballat was back there with our good buddy Tobiah. Sanballat and Tobiah, they were the ones that were truly ridiculing and hurting Nehemiah while he was building the wall. And he said, you've married into that family. I mean, of all families. he says, one, you shouldn't be marrying Gentiles in the first place. And of all people, now you've intermarried with the family of Sanballat. He's one of the leaders of the insurrection. He's one of the leaders that's trying to derail this thing. Wow. You know, we've got to stay separate from the world. That's been one of the great points of the New Testament of Jesus all along. Well, you don't mix and mingle with the world. Oh, you try to convert them, and you got to be in the world but not of the world, but that's just it. We got to stay out of the world. And they were going right back into the world. All right, what's going on here? Nehemiah did this wonderful work. The people in chapter 12 are rejoicing because of all the great things that Nehemiah did in helping rebuild the city and rebuild the wall and restoring the worship. Wish I had time to go back to Nehemiah 8 and talk about that. Just some neat stuff there, but I don't. And now, as he goes back to the king and says, thanks, king, it was great, he's watching it all unravel. He's watching the temple being desecrated by a foreigner taking up residence in there. He's watched the priests stop doing their priestly duties and going out and work in the fields. He saw that the Sabbath was not being honored and people were working and buying and selling and doing whatever they wanted to do rather than praising and meditating on God and taking a day off. And now he finds that the people are intermarrying and that the very structure of the home and the family is under siege. Wow. If I can speak proverbially, what Nehemiah was doing in chapter 13 was he had to go back and put another brick in the wall. And you see, that's the never-ending story of being faithful. We can never get to a point in our Christian lives and say, well, let's see, I became a Christian, I was baptized, I've eaten the Lord's Supper like I should, and I've done this and done that, I got it. Because anytime you think you've arrived, the devil's going to get busy and life's going to start unraveling again. Have you ever had that in life that you got a problem or two with the family, you got a problem or two at work or whatever, and you're working through this, and you think, Lord, if I can just get through this, if you'll just see me through this problem, then I'll be okay. And sure enough, he does. And somehow the problem gets resolved and things kind of smooth out. And you just kind of relax and it's wonderful. And say, oh, the Lord's there and it's really good. And I'm just going to coast for a while. And no more than you start coasting and you look at life, it starts unraveling again. It's like, I thought we had this solved. I thought I had this problem taken care of, or it's a new problem. I got to this. And so you work on that, and you think that one gets done, and then another one comes up. Like Nehemiah, we've got to learn in life that it's going to unravel. That we'll never get to a point that it always runs smoothly, that it always goes just the way we want it to go, that no matter how hard we try and how hard we work, the devil's still out there messing things up, and about the time we get life just wrapped up real neat in a package, he's going to start unraveling the bow. And that package that looks so neat and nice about life just all of a sudden falls apart. That's the never-ending story of being a Christian. That's the never-ending story of being faithful. That we need not give up, but rather be in this for the long haul. That's why John there with Jesus speaking through him said, be thou faithful unto death. Are you in it for the long haul? Are you in it like Nehemiah was in it to go back and, yes, put another brick in the wall? Now, I don't think he had to do that literally, because he had built the wall, but he went back to handle these spiritual problems. And so that spiritual wall that he had helped build there in Jerusalem with families and with the priests and with the people and all that, that had been torn down again, and it was time to put another brick back in the wall. My question to you this morning is, are you ready to put another brick back in the wall? Are you ready to commit yourself to the never-ending story of being faithful? Are you willing to commit yourself to say, through thick and thin, through long and short, I'm going to be there, and need be, I'm going to put another brick back in the wall? When a good friend goes back on the bottle after you've encouraged them to stay dry, it's time to put another brick back in the wall. When your child gets in trouble or is doing poorly at school and you've worked with them countless time on end as a parent, it's time to put another brick back in the wall. When you've cleaned that house 1,000 times and the kids get it all messed up again, it's time to put another brick back in the wall. When you've begged and pleaded for someone not to sin, when you've counseled them, when you've been to their house at midnight and you've given all that you know how to give and they go into sin anyway, it's time to put another brick back in the wall. When someone that you have baptized or helped teach falls away, it's time to put another brick back in the wall. When you've taught and taught and taught, and the person that you have taught and prayed for doesn't respond and doesn't respond and doesn't respond, are you ready to put another brick back in the wall? When people sin against you, when people say all manner of evil about you, when people persecute you, when they make life difficult, are you ready to put another brick back in the wall? when you've been cheated, when you've been robbed, when you've been slandered by someone that you care about, someone that's close to you, are you ready to put another brick back in the wall? If your spouse and you have fought for the umpteenth time, are you ready to put another brick back in the wall? When you've tried and tried to do the right thing, and no one in your world seems to care, are you ready to put another brick back in the wall? The wonderful story of Nehemiah was that even though he did that great work and it began to unravel, he was committed to the never-ending story of faithfulness. He was ready to go back and put another brick in that wall. We bring it to a close with the very last portion of Nehemiah chapter 13. Because Nehemiah's life here and trying to put that brick back in the wall ends with a prayer. And very simply, Nehemiah says, "Remember me, O my God, for good." Remember me, O my God, for good. Nehemiah wasn't perfect. He had sin in his life, just like all of us do. He may have felt at times that his life was in vain and his ministry was in vain. Well, look at all I did. I set up the worship before them and I restored that. I built the wall. I did this and it all unraveled. Why care? Nehemiah put another brick back in the wall and said, "Lord, don't remember me for the unraveling. Don't remember me for the problems. Don't remember me when things didn't go well. Remember me for good. Remember me for the good that I tried. Remember me because I was in it for the long haul. I was in it for the never-ending story of faithfulness. Remember me, oh my God, for the good that I've done." Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 58, "Your labor in the Lord is never in vain." I see a similar theme there, don't you? That truly, as Nehemiah prayed, "Oh Lord, remember me for good," Paul says, "Your labor in the Lord is never in vain." So next time you go out in life, and whether it be your family, your job, this church, whatever it might be in your relationships, and life begins to unravel, I want you to think of Nehemiah and how he put another brick back in the wall. And he was committed to the never-ending story of faithfulness. Do you need to start your road of faithfulness? We've selected an invitation song to encourage you that you can start building that wall of your life, putting that brick back in the wall to making it right with God so that your prayer can be Nehemiah's prayer, or shall I say Nehemiah's prayer be your prayer, "Oh God, remember me for good." Who's ready for the never-ending story of faithfulness? If you are, come while we stand and while we sing.